Page 136. Where is your brother? Part 1. Anwell and his mentally retarded brother Vernon live with their parents in Mullion, a small town in Australia. Anwell loves his brother and takes care of him, but is constantly worrying about him. Being ashamed, he feels as if Vernon is a curse to his and his parents' lives.
The last day was a Sunday, and Mother, too ill to go to church. She was frequently the victim of migraines that could shatter her for days. The curtains would be drawn in her bedroom, the sheets of the big bed turned back, water brought for the cooling of her forehead, and the door inflexibly closed. I imagined her lying in dimness, motionless as an effigy, and the shape of her pain was the shape of a shut door, its colour ivory. My father, dressed for church, told me I must stay home with Vernon. Experience told me what he meant. I was to keep my brother quiet. Were his fussing to invade the sick room, my mother's head would cave in or explode. I went to my room and shed my Sunday best gladly. I did not enjoy church. My father departed and I was left with the door of pain and Vernon, who was cooing peacefully. Another thing I understood, that Father, unusually free, would not come directly home from church, that he would find time-consuming distractions between there and here. When the gate clicked shut behind him, I wandered the hall aimlessly, savouring this rare chance to reign. It must not, I knew, be wasted. I decided to give Vernon his lunch early. Food sometimes made him sleepy. Once he was asleep, I would be more at liberty than I'd ever been. I could hang over the side fence and watch our neighbour Cuttle's television. There was no television in our house, but Mr. Cuttle didn't mind me peering through his window. Occasionally, he was kind enough to crank the volume so I could hear. We shared a taste for cartoons. I mashed a banana for Vernon and warmed it on the stove, adding milk and a little sugar. I carried the meal and a cloth to his bedroom, where he lay in a tangle in the cot. He grinned and snuffled to see me. I manoeuvred his limbs until he was propped upright, then waved the bowl under his nose. "Look, Vernon, banana!" He seemed eager, smacking his lips. When I brought the spoon to his mouth, however, he jerked his head away. "Banana!" I reminded him. "You like banana?" He gazed at me with watery eyes, flapping his hands in a fret. I knew what the problem was. Vernon couldn't tell the time. He didn't even know what o'clock was, but he knew it wasn't lunchtime. His life ran to a routine that never varied, and he liked it that way. Routine gave his adult existence some order, and by bringing his lunch early, I was undermining the mainstay of his world. I'd known he wouldn't like it, and I'd expected him to fight. But this was a morning unlike others for me, and I was steelishly determined to make it different for Vernon too. In his dunder-headed refusal to adapt, he was standing between myself and happiness. I hardly ever got the chance to watch cartoons. "Just eat it," I begged. "Banana, Vernon, look!" I zoomed the spoon into my own mouth, ate a dollop of the creamy mess. Vernon squeezed his eyes shut, whimpered flutely. I put the spoon to his lips and he batted it blindly away. Banana splattered the rubber sheet. I felt time getting away. "Oh, please, Vernon!" Sometimes he could be asked nicely and he would comply. Not this morning. He thrashed his head. I thought perhaps he wanted to be left alone. That was allowed. He could be alone. In his cot, he'd come to no harm, and I could make regular rushes from the fence to his window to check that he was indeed all right. I wiped the banana off the sheet, hauled up the cot wall and made for the door. I was almost through it when Vernon whined. I hesitated, looking back. He had his face jammed between the bars. He wanted me to stay. He would not eat or sleep or entertain himself. He decided I must stay. A quill of hatred sparked in me. No, Enwell's busy, Vernon. He stared at me with eyes like blue stones and gave a short, shrill shriek. The sparrows browsing on the lawn burst into the sky. I shut the door quickly and waved my hands to quieten him. Enwell's busy. I could hear the theme song of the cartoons. Vernon, be a good boy. He curled his lip and I knew he didn't agree. I knew he was brewing a blood-curdling howl that would wake my mother and ruin the day. I thought fast. Maybe I could take him outside and let him lie in the grass. I could carry him easily, although he was bigger than me. He wasn't allowed in the front garden, but the rear yard was private. Only the birds would see him there. It wasn't the best solution. He'd eat the grass, get covered in dirt, but at least he would be quiet and far from the door of pain. I was instantly decided. Time was getting away. I lowered the wall of the cot and slid my hands under his arms. Vernon, come outside, I enthused. See the flowers? See the clouds? But he looked at me uncivilly and twisted himself away. I grappled for him. He kicked at me. He threw himself back like a mule. His head hit a post of the cot and he yelled with outrage, his face instantly awash with tears. He wasn't crying. He wasn't hurt. He was Vernon at his worst. I clapped my hands, bounced on my toes, knotted in brittle frustration. Today, Mr. Cuttle might open the window, might let me choose a chocolate from the selection he kept on a tray. Birdies, I sang madly. Come, see the birds, Vernon. I reached out again and he lashed at me. His fingernails, kept square and short, were nonetheless sharp as kitten claws and shaved strips of skin from my cheek. The pain of it rocked through me, chased by revulsion and hatred. My hand came up and slapped him hard across the face. Vernon gasped. He sucked in all the air in the room. He straightened his shoulders with dignity and filled the house with his scream. With one palm pressed to my wounded face, I could only block one ear. He arched his back and screamed again, purple and green with rage. I put my hand over his mouth and he jerked away, threshing his legs, sucking in air, screaming again. I was only 7, and they would say I wasn't thinking, but that is not true. In those moments, though I was dazed, I considered many things. I felt a plasma witness between the fingers at my face. I knew I wasn't going to be watching any cartoons. I felt sad enough to cry over this rare day, destroyed. I felt bad for hating Vernon, yet the sight of him, his tongue wobbling like a fish, his nappy working loose at the waist, bubbles erupting out of his nose, made me despise him all the more. I had lost my pity for him. I joined my parents on their icy plateau. And my mother would surely be woken by the commotion, and when my father came home, I would be lectured and whipped. I thought I heard mutterings from her room already. I told them later. I tried to comfort him, but that isn't really true. Shh, I moaned, but the great tide of noise that Vernon made drowned out these mousy sounds. He simply roared. His mouth was stretched as wide as it would go. His lips were jaundice yellow. I imagined his skull shattering beneath the force of his scream. My hand groped for the cloth and jammed it into his mouth. Immediately, the scream was muffled. His eyes flew open in surprise. From the room of pain along the hall, I heard sounds. My only thought now was to hide myself from my fate and to hide the monster I'd made of my brother. I needed to put him somewhere that would contain his noise and keep him safe and hide him until this mayhem went away. He was breathing like a blown horse, his frail ribcage heaving. I wrapped my arms around his waist and dragged him from the cot. He was light and stunned, and he did not struggle. I hoisted him up and opened the door and made my way through the house, unsteady but desperate, determined. Vernon lay like a dog in my arms, his face patched rosy, his hands moving lostly in the air. The door to the laundry was open, and the door of the unused refrigerator kept there was likewise off its latch. I bundled Vernon into my chest and used a knee to dislodge the refrigerator's metal racks, which clanged one after another to the floor. In their place, I shoveled Vernon, who fitted the space easily. He folded onto the refrigerator floor, his hands tucked in his lap. I shut the door before he could escape. It swung a great slab and the rubber seal stuck tight. I slumped against it, panting. When I gathered myself and stepped back to look, there was no sign of him. The fridge stood silent and white as a secret, and the house was mercifully quiet. Only my ears were ringing.